Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Megan McAllister was already pretty unusual when she encountered the man in the black suit that night. What Division 1 Agent Echo didn't know was that she was even more special, but he'd find out soon enough. Stephanie Osborne uses the urban legend of operatives who show at UFO sightings and make things disappear to craft her vision of the universe we don't know. The Division 1 series chronicles this via recruit Omega and experienced partner Echo as they handle everything from lost children to alien assassination and more. Book 1, Alpha and Omega, is available in print and ebook from your favorite bookseller.
Every author has that one story that hits close to home for them. This is Yvonne Mason's.
This book is very personal to me.
The 50s has been idealized as a time of prosperity and growth for some. Those with mental and physical challenges often faced scorn and ridicule, and were destined to be left in so-called hospitals to wither and die. Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option, is the uplifting story of a man named Stan and his family's courage to defy the odds and succeed in an era where no merit was seen in the challenged.
It is the true story of my brother who was mentally and physically challenged. It is because of my brother Stan that I am a successful author.
Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option, is available through Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com now.
Horror enthusiasts and fans of things that go bump in the night, rejoice, as there is a new collection of creepy tales to keep your spine tingling and your blood running cold. The brainchild of prolific author Yvonne Mason. Welcome to Your Nightmare as an anthology of stories from a gifted batch of writers specializing in keeping you up at night. Whether you love gruesome tales of murder and mayhem, or you prefer quaint tales of scary happenings, welcome to Your Nightmare, sure to please the inner psychopath and whet even the most insatiable horror appetite. Welcome to Your Nightmare is available now on Amazon.com.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday night. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And yes, what can I say? Shameless, shameless, shameless promotion. The first ad was Division 1 books by my friend and fellow author, Stephanie Osborne. You need to go check those out. The second book, Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option, is the reason I do what I do. The third book, Welcome to Your Nightmare, is an anthology of horror stories that a few friends and I got together and put together for your enjoyment. So go check all those out. Now, my guest and I, before we started, was talking about dreams and things that are journeys and all this good stuff. Well, this radio show was a 5-year dream, and it finally came to fruition last July. And my goal was that by the end of this year, we would have 15,000 listeners. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are almost there. And it is only March. Yes, we are at 11,264 listeners. Now,
congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. We are heard, ladies and gentlemen, all over the world. And I have to give a shout out to Australia, because Australia is my biggest supporter on Blog Talk Radio. They beat out the USA 2-1. They are 72% listeners, which is absolutely amazing. Love my people from down under. But we're heard in Canada, Germany, Korea, Egypt, Ecuador, the UK, Russian Federation, Indonesia, Singapore, Australia, Ireland, Croatia, Tunisia, New Zealand, Taiwan, Brazil, Pakistan, India, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, Portugal, Hungary, Bulgaria, Norway, the Ukraine, Vietnam, Finland, Sweden, and the USA. So when I say we are heard all over the world, ladies and gentlemen, we are heard all over the world. So if you have...
What an accomplishment.
and it's because of y'all, and it's because of all my guests. So if you have a book, art, music, a platform, you just want to chat for an hour, a business, you want to talk politics, religion, I don't care. Because I believe we can have a dialogue and still be friends, even if we disagree. So hit me up on offthechainradio@yahoo.com and let me book you. Believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, I am booked all the way through the end of July.
Excellent.
And I have more and more people every day wanting to come on the show. So I'm game if you are. You don't know the answer to the question until you ask it. So tonight, now that the housekeeping is done for the moment, a real good friend of mine who I've had the pleasure and honor of knowing because she and I shared a publisher that went south on us along with a whole group of us, and we've helped each other through the years and supported each other when sometimes we wanted to throw in the towel, and we've encouraged each other, uplifted each other, held each other's hands on our journey, and it's a wonderful feeling to, even though you've never met these people in person, you have this kinship with them. And my guest tonight, Andy Keller, she's been writing novels and screenplays for over 40 years. She is a veteran of the stage, singing and starring in the lead role of the tomboyish Princess Winifred in Once Upon a Mattress, which gained her an invitation to audition for the Metropolitan Opera in New York at 17 years old.
That's right.
She has received the National Thespian Award and has appeared in numerous additional theater productions in New York, Michigan, and Maryland, including The Admirable Crichton, The Crucible, and The Pajama Game. And those are all well-known plays.
Yep.
When she's not writing novels, Anne enjoys bringing the gift of music to all within the sound of her clear, bell-like soprano. I've never had the pleasure of hearing her sing, but by cracky, I expect her to cut me a CD. She lives... She lives
in the West. I will do what I can, madam.
Thank you. She lives in the western suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio, with her three active sons. And let me tell you, I've heard those boys sing. And, honey, heaven is missing three angels because they are here on earth. Welcome, my sweet friend. I am so, so honored and tickled, just tickled to death that you're here.
Thank you, Yvonne. I'm delighted to be here.
We're going to have so much fun, and this hour is going to fly by so fast that people are going to say, what the world is going on? But I have to tell the audience, last Saturday night, Anne was supposed to be on the show. Well, 8 o'clock, 10 minutes of 8 rolled around, no Anne. 5 minutes of 8 rolled around, no Anne. I'm going, we got a problem, but I didn't know what the problem was, but I had the 6-1 in the pit of my stomach. 8 o'clock, no Anne. I'm going, okay, something's wrong.
You were right, something was wrong.
Anne does not miss appointments. That's not Anne. Well, come to find out, one of her sons had surgery a couple of weeks before and had a blood clot in his arm. And I don't blame her. I would have dropped everything, children, husbands, cats, dogs, it wouldn't have mattered, off to the ER. She went, as she should have. But thank goodness he is okay and on the mend, and he's not going to scare the hell out of me anymore.
Or me. Gosh. We don't want to be in that position ever again. Yeah, he's doing much, much better. Yeah, we're very happy.
Well, let him know that I said that's his scare for the next 20 years. He's not allowed to do anything like that ever again.
I will tell John. I will let him know. He's not allowed to do that anymore.
No. He got his one shot. He scared us all to death. Now he can move on with life and be boring.
That's right.
So let's take a step back in time. First of all, you and I hooked up when we were with a publisher, along with Deborah Simpson, Ann Ornstein, Nicholas Grabowski, Andrea Dean Benskoyak, and a couple of others. And this publisher was not a very nice man. He left
that
us all.
That is very correct. Yeah.
And I'm being nice because I blasted him the other night on my show, and I called his name. But what he did for us is he left us as a cohesive, tight-knit, close group of writers who...
I would say that's true. I mean, even though the years have passed, we have stayed cemented together through all of our trials and tribulations since then.
Yes,
and I
we
think
have.
We're still very close.
We are, all of us, because we all seem to pick up on each other's vibes and energy. When one of us is down, the other one's there, and if one of us puts out a call, everybody comes running through social network to support us, which sometimes your own family doesn't even know in person.
That's unfortunately true, yes.
So I am forever grateful, even though he was a jackass and I could have strangled him. I feel by him like I do my children's father who abused me. I can say thank you for the abuse because you bit me but you didn't break me and you created a survivor and I can withstand anything. So with this publisher, I say thank you because you gave me some of the greatest friends in the world.
I would say that's true, and I definitely want to put a shout-out to you, especially, Yvonne. I mean, you bend over backwards to help your friends, to help fellow authors, even fellow musicians, other people, to get themselves out there and, you know, give them a chance to spread their voices all over the world. And that opportunity does not come every day. So thank you for all that you do.
Well, you're welcome, honey, but I'm only successful because you guys make me look so damn good.
Well, we do our very best.
And you do it so well.
I'm so glad.
So I am really appreciative of that.
Excellent.
So let's talk a little bit about Anne tonight. Take me as far back as you want to take me in your life got to this point. Because at one point, you should have been on the stage with the Metropolitan Opera. So let's take a walk down memory lane and talk about your young life and how you wove that tapestry and where you are now.
Okay. All right. Well, I can take you back to the dawn of time at the age of the dinosaurs when I was young. And that would probably be starting out in Ohio. My family lived just to the east of Columbus. I was born in Columbus, Ohio, and then we migrated out to a little farm out there. And I used to play in the creek that we had on our property. We had about 10 acres. And I would compose these incredible sagas, these stories, these fantastic adventures in my head while I was busily falling into the creek five times in a single day. So I would put myself as the heroine, of course, in every one of my sagas. And I would go from there. And I would compose these things underneath the front porch as I was busily ripping out the metal axles out of my brother's Tonka trucks or painting the house, just something to keep my mind distracted. And I kept creating these things over the course of time. By the time I reached about age 12, I could no longer sustain them in my head, and I began to write them down. In my closet here in the room that I'm standing in, and also in the basement in several closets, are the manuscripts of a lifetime. I kept writing and writing and writing over the course of years, poetry, romances, westerns, mysteries, you name it, I did it. But they never win anywhere. Most of them are unfinished, unfortunately. I'd get so far, and then I'd run out of steam and get excited about something else and decide to go that way. So I never completed them, which I am beginning to do now. I finally reached the age of about 50, after trying and trying to get published through a normal publisher. I can probably paper my house many times over with the around 200 rejection letters that I received over the course of the years. I tried Mills and Boone Publishing in London numerous times, sent them chapters, they requested more, I sent them more chapters. The money flew, the postage was just out the wall, and I got nothing as a thank you. So more rejection letters. So finally I decided at age 50, this is it, I'm going to publish myself, and I began. I am now on the far side of 60, and I have 26 books out there. Just recently I had a major, newsflash or whatever, development. I decided rather than composing incredibly long novels, 60,000 words or, 80,000 words or something like that, that I would try for something that would be more interesting for me and hopefully more lucrative and enjoyable for the public, too. I would try something a little bit shorter. It seems to be that people no longer want to delve into Gone with the Wind size books. They would rather bounce around from one to the other and have a quick read, definitely a chapter book. People are coming and going, and they're very busy, and they don't want to sit still and, page through the novel of the century. So I decided to try a different route, and it's really, really working for me. I turned over this leaf in November, and since that time I've been cranking out anywhere from 2 to 4 books a month.
Wow.
I do all of my own editing, all of my own publishing. My covers are done either by Debbie DeSantis or by Anula with Fiber. She does an excellent job, too. So, I mean, the cover is the eye catcher. I mean, covers and reviews sell books. We know that. You've got to get people's attention first, and they say, oh, my gosh, what is this all about? It looks really mysterious. Or, wow, that looks like a great romance. Or, who the heck is that creature on the front of this cover? I've got to find out about this fantasy. And you go from there. And then the reviews actually attract their attention because I don't think people like to stick out in a crowd, except for strange people like probably me, Yvonne.
Exactly.
And a few others who want
to
claim the limelight.
Why should they run with the crowd when they can run ahead of the crowd?
So anyway, people like to be joiners. So if they see the review is there, then they think, oh, good. Well, it must be good because somebody reviewed it and they liked it, so maybe I will too. And then they manage to buy the book, and you go from there. So as far as my literary stuff goes, it's been a lifetime pursuit. I come from a family of authors. My grandfather, George Dell, won numerous awards for poetry, and this was at a time when his books were not well received. He wrote about the Germans in Ohio and some of the early settlers. And at that time, it was at the height of World War II. This was not a very nice thing to do. It was not, well received at that time. However, many of his novels have now been published thanks to the efforts of my aunt. He lived to age 91. And all of his books were published after he was gone, which is really, really sad that none of them got out there during his lifetime. He was also a composer of music, and in fact, the fight song for Capital University is his. He taught at Capital University for 35 years, taught English there, and knew Beowulf by heart and would actually recite it to the class as he was standing in front of them. His favorite thing was to get up on top of his desk with an overturned trash can and be Macbeth with his sword. So you can see where I get the the drama from. It's in my blood. I can't help it.
I would have loved to have taken a class with him. I would have loved him. An amazing man.
Yeah, he was a hoot. Yeah, he was very creative and a blast. He was just a lot of fun. And he taught me to write what you know. So what I have done in my novels is I take them from my own life. These are real life experiences in many cases. Some of them are actually take place at the homes or in the environments that I have lived. For example, Keeper of Her Heart actually takes place at our house, Kirkmead, in the Berkshire Mountains. I know the house. I lived there for, gosh, better part of a decade. I know the gardens. I weeded them. You know? So it helps a great deal if you can write from your own experience, because it just makes whatever you're trying to describe come to life. You have your pulse on it. You understand how the person is thinking and feeling. You've been there. You've seen the play of light on a floor that's in an old 200-year house, and it's been, you know, varnished, and our chicken house burned. And this is not just a little chicken house like out in the back. This was a major business. This is a three-story
right.
high, football size long chicken house. And there was a group of arsonists that were operating at that time in the Massachusetts and New York area. And unfortunately, the arsonist had ties back to the local fire department or departments. And at that time, everybody knew everybody else. And they were some of the founding families. So even the police were involved. I mean, everybody was keeping hush-hush about it. Nobody ratted out on the family. So when my father moved in, our property was on the border between Massachusetts and New York, as it is in the book. And the chicken house being set ablaze was a warning for him to shut up and stop causing trouble in the area, stop trying to do the right thing and just go along with the crowd. So he let it be known very clearly that if the house that we were living in was ever set ablaze, that the FBI would be called in because it was a bi-state property.
Wow.
Yeah. So what happens in that book is partially based on fact. In another one of my books, The Light of Love, that takes place on a very remote area on Lake Superior in Michigan. I lived in Michigan in two different places. I know the area. I know what that's like. And it really brings the books to life when you have that life experience in your background. By hook or by crook, I have lived or been through every single one of the continental United States, which is quite an accomplishment.
That is,
and
absolutely.
Yeah, that helps me to understand what these areas are like. I haven't been to Alaska, and I would love to see Hawaii, darn it. I used to sell tours to Hawaii, and I haven't gotten there yet.
Well, you have to go to Alaska. It's one of the most beautiful states that we have. I've been there.
Yeah, have you been there?
I love it. I would go back tomorrow.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And catch a can.
But go in the summertime?
I've heard the
mosquitoes and flies are humongous.
Now, go in June. Go in June. Make sure you go to Ketchikan, because that is one of the neatest little fishing villages you will ever have seen in your life.
Oh, my. By neat, what do you mean? Like old-fashioned?
Yeah, and all the houses are built up on the side of the mountain. And the mountain meets the mountain meets the Pacific, and the houses are built up on the side of the mountain. And then you have the boats in the bay right there, and then you have the town at the foot of the mountain. But all the homes are up on the side of the mountain. It's amazing.
Good grief! Wow.
You would love it.
Let's hope that they never have an earthquake there, because it would be disastrous.
It would, but you could write some and go to Skagway, because that was the last stop before they went over into the Yukon to pan for gold.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have the old cemeteries there, and a lot of history is there at Skagway.
Yeah, that would probably be the last point of civilization before they disappeared into the wild.
Exactly.
Wow.
I want to digress a little bit because you and I talked briefly before the show.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm all about dreams and fulfilling dreams, and my brother is the reason that I am living my dream. And he is retarded, ladies and gentlemen. He's unique. But he always believed that you can. He never said, I can't. So failure was never an option for him.
Mm-hmm.
But Ann had an experience. And when I say this, if she could go back and do it over, she would. She would change the answer. But you received, because of your lead role as Princess Winifred, you gained an invitation to audition for the Metropolitan Opera in New York. Now, explain to the folks what a privilege and an honor and words I can't even come up with it was at 17 years old to be asked to audition for that. And then tell us what happened.
I was very, very humbled and honored to be asked. My music teacher and I drilled and drilled and drilled for weeks for me to get ready for this role. Princess Winifred was the lead in Once Upon a Mattress. She was kind of a tomboyish character. She was indeed a princess, but she didn't have any of the girlish fanciness about her at all. Her favorite place was the swamp. She would go hunting, fishing, things like that. She felt nothing about getting dirty, which is kind of like my persona. I was definitely a tomboy as I was growing up. But I didn't know it at that time, but there were scouts in the audience that night when I was up on stage, and they were very impressed because I'm just a little thing. I'm only 5 feet tall. And at that time, I was a little over about 110 pounds. And yet, I had a fantastically strong voice for my size. And I have retained, even to this day, that clear bell-like quality of my soprano, first soprano, very, very high. Even though I'm on the other side of 60 now, it stayed that way. So they were impressed, and they talked to me at the side of the stage after the final curtain call. And they said, well, can we talk to you about maybe auditioning in New York for the Metropolitan Opera? And I said, are you kidding? And they said, no, we're very serious. We'd like to talk with your parents and see how this can be arranged. So they did discuss it with them, and my mother and father waited over, and we discussed it at some length at home. And then my dad made his decision, and he said, nope, she's going to go to college and become a manager. So my dream never had a chance to be. And I am encouraging my sons to go ahead with their dreams and supporting them 110%. Because it's very, very hard when you shut a person down and they never have their chance to be whatever it is that they want to be. Rather than the big football star that, you know, the husband always wanted to be. No, what if the kid doesn't want to do that? What if he wants to be a bricklayer? And then support him in that. Let him do his thing. But
parents should never. Yeah, parents should never live vicariously through their children, because that might not be that child's dream, and it's wrong, I feel like, to rob that child of an opportunity to see if it really is his dream to do something else.
Right.
Parents had their chance, and for whatever they didn't fulfill it, don't put that burden on your child, because what we do as parents when we do that is we not only cheat our children, we cheat ourselves of our future.
That is true. Yep. Now, that's not to say that parents shouldn't support their children in maybe exposing them to different types of things that they might never have thought of on their own. That I do believe in, that you can show them, well, you know, this is what Irish food is like, or something like that, so that they get exposed to different things that they might never have tumbled to if you hadn't encouraged them in that direction. But if they hate it, okay, then we try something else.
And if a child, say a child wants to be My favorite line is, if a child wants to be a garbage collector, mm-hmm. allow that child to pursue that dream, because number one, it's a very needed profession. Because
that's
without
right.
garbage collectors, we would have problems. And number two, it is honest pay. And number
mm-hmm.
three, it's there's nothing wrong with being a garbage collector. So if
no.
a child wants to try that, like
mm-hmm.
Ann says, encourage that child. Let that child talk to your local sanitation worker. Let him get a feel for what it's like to get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to handle other people's garbage.
Yeah.
How do they
yeah.
feel about it? Is it just a job to them? Is it something that they enjoy doing? Many people do. But ladies and gentlemen, whatever you do, do not discount your children's dreams. Ann's was discounted, and I'm sure her father thought he was doing what was best for her at the moment. But
mm-hmm.
we will never know if Ann could have been another opera singer. I mean, we could have seen her on television. And she
yeah,
would have been famous.
I would have enjoyed being on stage, that's for sure. And I would have enjoyed singing as loudly as I possibly could, and, you know, maybe supporting people, even if it was just in the chorus. I have a feeling, though, that my love of center stage probably would have gotten the better of me, and I would have at least gotten a supporting role, but we'll see. I am at the core a ham. I'm a Leo, and I love the limelight. But that's not to say that I don't, you know, support other people in their getting their chance to shine. I think that's something that I want to encourage very much in my sons and in everybody that I know. Go for that dream. As William Shatner says, go for the yes. Because
and
if you don't, you're going to regret it.
And we also talked about William Shatner and the Star
mm-hmm.
Trek series and the fact
yeah.
that he didn't really want that part.
No. No, when the Star Trek series was presented to William Shatner, I read one of his biographies and was absolutely blown away that Star Trek might never have been. They thought it was a flash in the pan. We're just going to do this crazy pilot. It sounds completely ridiculous, but okay, I don't have anything to do at the moment. And the sucker took off. Oh, my gosh. And it played for years, and then
mm-hmm.
several movies were made afterward, either with or without William Shatner and Spock, Leonard Nimoy, Forrest Kelly, all of them. Yep.
And what happened is that put William Shatner on the map, and his entire career catapulted after that.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Yep. Without Star Trek, and the springboard that caused, where the heck would he be?
Not
it
on Boston
every...
Legal, that's for sure.
But that yes, saying yes to the opportunity, opened up those doors. If he had never said yes, who knows what would have happened? Maybe it would have succeeded, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. There's many opportunities.
It wasn't just another actor that came out. Actor, he never really made it, but his anything out there.
Yeah, Yvonne, you're breaking up a little bit. I'm getting about every third word. Sorry about that. Yeah, we're having some storms up here. Now I can hear you a little bit better. It's been an interesting day. We've had extremely high winds, and the storms blew through, and now we're going to get some more cold and more snow, darn it. Spring just won't come around here, but this is Cleveland, so this is what we do.
That's true. My friend Kelly Koch, who also publishes my book, she's from Cleveland. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
oh,
she,
good. Okay. Well,
she understands.
You know.
Yeah, we know.
Yep.
So when your father said no, you went to college. did you become a manager?
Well, I got the training to be a manager. So I graduated with my degree in management and a minor in French. Then I went out and I got my first job as a manager. My very first day, I was not asked, but told, ordered, to fire two ladies who were old enough to be my mother.
Uh-oh.
It was one of the hardest things I ever had to do in my life, and that was such a burning spear in my whole hope and dream of maybe doing what my father wanted me to do. I never went back to it again.
Wow.
No.
What did you do instead?
Well, that began a step back, and I worked a lot of temporary jobs because after that, I wasn't really sure what the heck I wanted to do. Management was the most general of all of the different kinds of degrees that you could get out of the college that I attended, Wallace College here in Ohio. So I thought, all right, now what am I going to do? So I had to expose myself to different types of industries to see if something would appear to me to be a course of action that I could take. So I was a secretary, and I bounced all over Cleveland, to the east side, to the west side, to the south. I walked around downtown Cleveland in 3-inch heels and sometimes 3.5-inch heels. How I did that now, I have no idea. But anyway, I used to type with a stapler on top of the papers that I was typing because of all the huge fans that were blowing in the office trying to keep the heat down. I have worked in a dye works where they dye all of the yarns for Janssen, for all the sweaters that you have, Court, and, you know, places like that. And I was the office go-to girl. And then finally that turned into, well, maybe you can do some data entry on our computer. And at that time, the computer was a big critter, and you had floppy disks, huge mm-hmm. floppy disks that were about, remember those things? They were new.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So this was brand new technology back then. Oh, my gosh. And I used to burst all of the IBM-printed reports, and there were 7 copies of these things because they had to go to different areas in the plant. Now, copy number 7 was basically just garbage. It was just blobs on the paper. But, okay, you had to have the order for Court, you know, coral or blue or magenta or whatever it would be. So, all right, fine. And I would run all over the plant. And in the summer, this was a very, very hot position. But anyway, so I went to different types of industries, and I found out that I had this flair for computers, and it just slowly developed over the course of time. And over the course of years, I have been a paralegal for 14 years. I have been a tester for, gosh, well over a decade. I've worked in banking for about 11 years. I've been all over the country. So I got a lot of experience in different types of positions. I worked in a box plant down in South Carolina. So you can see I bounced around everywhere. And as I did, I met so many wonderful and different types of people. I know what the Southerners are like. I lived there for a while. Their type of their way of speaking. The French fries that are down there. Boy, I love those French fries.
They're good. They are so good. Nothing like Southern French fries.
Oh, Bojangles. Yep. Bojangles fries. That's my one. Yep. go ahead.
The thing is, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm thinking, not only did living in all the different places that you lived, but working all of those jobs, as my friend that is sitting here with me listening in, this background also enriched your writing.
Yes, it did. It did. Because I was able to experience different positions and different lifestyles. So it gave me that flexibility of shifting from one environment to another with relative ease. So, yes, you are correct.
And then when the first book that I remember you putting out was the fantasy book that you put out, Torrent Seed.
Yeah, Brigham.
Brigham was the first one, and Torrent Seed was behind it.
Yes.
Where did you come up
with
that?
And I never thought that I could write science fiction fantasy. I mean, this is a girl who grew up with main love was the romances, all the different types of romances. I branched out occasionally, but my core was in the romances. And then for some crazy reason, I got this idea that I could write something kind of like Star Trek, but with my own offshoot. So I did that, and Brigham was born. Brigham is definitely science fiction. It's also fantasy, because
mm-hmm.
Brigham has a wonderful dragon in it. It has magic in it. There's a crusty old wizard in it. So, yes, there's an awful lot to explore in there. And I loved it, because for the first time, nobody could say, well, that's not possible. How do you know?
Exactly. It's your world. It can be anything you want it to be.
That's right. When you write historical romances or historical anything, I guess, you've really got to do your research, and you have
yes.
to be sure of your ground. Go ahead.
No, finish your sentence.
When I wrote The Devil's Crescent, I had to do my research to make sure that I based it with the kind of speaking that would be going on at that time in southern Texas, right on the Mexican border, post-Civil War, that the area was correct, that the trials and tribulations that they were encountering was something that really did happen, and yes, it did. So when you write science fiction, you can branch out as widely as you wish. Yep.
You also wrote A Splinter in Time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, what see you in my head, and stays in my head, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all have no idea. It gets a little scary
dear.
In there.
Oh, no. I'm lingering in your head. This is bad.
Yes, all the time. When you wrote A Splinter in Time, what is that one about? Because that was some of your earlier work.
Yes. Yes, it is. So what happened was that Vortex of Revelation, The Last Days, and Vortex of Revelation, The Second Coming, are two books that I wrote when we still lived in Oregon. So this was a long time ago. And basically at that time, it was pre-2012. And I kept having these darn visions about what would happen in the world. And I would write them down. And my husband at that time was working with me, and we were incredulous because time and again, I can't tell you the number of times it happened. I can't fit them on both hands. I would write something, and the following morning or maybe even a few days later, it really happened. And we
wow.
were just aghast. Somebody was guiding this. So we published Vortex of Revelation, The Last Days, and The Second Coming. Since my divorce, I looked back at those two books and I thought, wait a minute, there's a lot that I would change. I would rewrite and some things that I would add to those two books. So that became the Timeless series. So that was A Splinter in Time. That was my title for it. So it has some additional things in there. And then The Edge of Hope is book two. So those are in the Timeless series. They have additional chapters in there that Vortex of Revelation series does not.
Now I have to get those books because I got Vortex and I read it. Now you're going to make me go and get A Splinter in Time just to see what else you
I'm
have. Oh,
yeah. I'm sorry.
You're evil.
I wet your whistle. Oh, dear.
You're such an evil woman. When your father, I'm going to step back for just a minute. When your father said no, you're going to go to school and be a manager, how empty did that make you feel?
I was devastated, totally destroyed, because I had worked so hard, and my music teacher felt the same way. It would have been a triumph for both of us, because we had put our hearts and souls into making me the best that I could be, and it had been noticed, and then nothing was allowed to happen. So I felt very, very bad about that.
Would it be fair to say, Anne, that a piece of your heart had been ripped out and thrown at your feet?
Yeah, it's gone, and I'll never get it back.
So, again, ladies and gentlemen, I go back to this. If your child, because not on the same magnificent level that Anne happened to Anne, but as a child in school, I was told, you can't, you're not good enough, don't even think about it. They told me, they took my reading and my writing away from me because math was not my friend. So instead of encouraging, instead of encouraging me and teaching me math through reading and writing, they punished me. So I didn't write for a long, long time. And if I wrote, nobody ever saw it because it was never good enough. So now...
Wow.
Betty Jewel's song, I just want to say thank you to all of those who told me no. That's become my mantra.
So now it's the challenge, that bar over which you must leap.
Absolutely.
And you do so well.
And I'm telling them all, you know, thank you for telling me no, because between what y'all did for me and what my brother did for me, just watch me now. And my girlfriend just said, did your father ever say if he regretted his decision later in life when he saw that management was not for you?
You know, he's gone now. He lived to almost 92. He died actually a year ago from this tomorrow, Saturday. He died a year ago. And I never heard him say, I'm sorry, I didn't let you try that.
What a shame.
Yeah. He never said that. Although he did change in the way that he was supporting me. And when I did start to write all these books, he was encouraging in that regard. So... I guess he did a little bit of a flip, but he never apologized for denying me that chance. No.
And maybe he didn't know how, because he was of that generation.
That is true. That is true. And he was a very strong man and very proud.
Yeah.
So it's hard. Yeah.
And supporting you in your writing, he, without saying, Anne, I made a very bad mistake, I wanted something for you that I might have wanted, he took that and turned it around so that he encouraged you to continue writing, which that may be where you needed to be all along. But that being said, yeah, we have shoulda, woulda, couldas. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this woman is also a magnificent screenplay writer. She, I
humbly
love her.
Thank you.
I love her, because she took my book, Tangled Minds, and after she read it, and do you know I use your review as the synopsis for that book?
Well,
because
thank you.
She said that the book was reminiscent of Mice and Men, which, if you've ever read any of Faulkner's work, that is high praise, and I'm so humbled by it. But she also wrote the screenplay for that book. And I want you to know, I've given that screenplay to a friend of mine who is a film producer and filmmaker.
Good.
So,
excellent.
If it goes to fruition. Yes, ma'am, you get top billing as screenplay.
Oh, my goodness. But it's your work, Yvonne. We'll co-billing.
It was a joint effort, my child. I mean, that screenplay has sat in my hands for how long now?
Oh, gosh.
Ten years? 9 years?
Yep, something like that. Wow. Wow.
But she did a beautiful. She nailed the screenplay, and 99%. Really, and 99% of the book was in the screenplay, which is an impossible
mm-hmm.
job because screenplays are what, 20 pages tops.
Well, I don't know about that. Most of your screenplays, but just for a standard movie, you can figure more or less about a page a minute. So most of your screenplays that go on the big stage, the big screen, would be anywhere from 60 to 90, and that's about all people can stand. Yep.
See? And a lot of the books, when they take a screenplay from a book, they have to cut a lot of it out. She
mm-hmm.
nailed 90% of the book in this screenplay.
Oh.
And, honey, it was a thing of beauty to behold.
Oh, well, thanks. Thank you. Let's hope it takes off. That would be awesome. Oh, my gosh.
Awesome?
That would be great.
It can happen. Things have happened from this show. Things have happened from this show that from some of my guests, they call me up or they send me a note and say, Yvonne, this happened from the show. And I'm going, see? There you go.
Great. That's great. Yep.
Anything
else? Yeah, what you're doing with this show is truly remarkable. Yeah, I humbly thank you.
Well, you're coming back. You're going to be a regular. I hope you know that, because we didn't get to half of your books. We didn't get to half of your stories, and we're running out of time. So.
That's all right.
So
I know. We get to talking, and I get to rambling, and then the next thing you know, somebody's ringing the bell and say, hello.
It's time for you people to go home now. Last call was 5 minutes ago. Get out. But tell the folks where you can be found, my beautiful friend.
Well, my books can be found in many, many wonderful places. The strongest, of course, would be on Amazon.com in all of its various realms, everyone from the United Kingdom to the United States, Canada, Japan, everywhere that Amazon goes. They're all out there, and you can look for them in Kindle format, and also in paperback. Both of them are on Amazon, as well as on the Barnes & Noble site. If you want to buy the book in hardcover only, paperback, then you can go through my publisher, which is lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, and they have the titles there as well. Quite a few of them are up on the Internet right now in all of the various e-formats. Smashwords has a version as well. So they're out there in many, many wonderful ways, which is awesome. Gets the word out.
And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, when you sit down with one of Anne's books, you don't want to get up. And then when you finish it, you're pissed off at her because it ended. So you go get another one. It's your drug of choice, I'm telling you. It's your drug of choice.
Your drug of choice? Oh, my gosh.
How do you speak the facts, ma'am?
So Yvonne is an addict. Okay. All right. I get it. I'm cool.
Yeah. What can I say? It's your fault.
I know what you're talking about, though, because there are authors out there that I read religiously. Every single thing that comes out that's written by Diana Palmer, she's my
mm-hmm.
favorite author, I will devour her books. I love them. So when you latch on to an author, you think, wow, you know, this is great. I just can't get enough. And they can't crank them out fast enough. I think Barbara Cartland, who was a prolific writer when she was alive, cranked out a book a month, and that was quite a feat for her. They were full-length books, but she had help. I mean, she had people who were doing the editing for her and publishing and all that jazz. But if you think about it, just trying to crank through all those pages, 50,000 words, 60,000 words, that's a lot of writing.
And she also put historical facts in her novels.
Yes, she did. Yeah, she sure did. And that's the toughie, is you've got to be historically accurate. Otherwise, people are going to call you on it.
Every time.
Very true.
I want to read something because our little band of authors, our little group that has been so tight all of these years, and I am so, y'all don't know how grateful I am because you know some of the stuff that I've been through in the last few years, and without all of y'all, I could not have made it.
Aww.
So I love you.
Well, I feel the same way. We've all been through some bumps and dings, and we have held together, and you're right. We've supported ourselves, our fellow authors and fellow friends, when the chips were down. And that's the mark of a true friend.
It is. And this was given to me, and I'm going to pass it on to you. It says, your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. How you leave others feeling after having an experience with you becomes your trademark.
I would agree with that.
That is so, so true because, ladies and gentlemen, this is how we make each other feel. You see the give and take between Nan and I tonight, and it is pure, it is real, and we almost can finish each other's sentences. We've never met in person. Never. But we've been together.
One of these days we are going to meet, and heaven help us when we do.
Oh,
Lord. Both of us are going to wind up being watering pots, and we'll be crying and laughing all the same time.
That's true. That is, you got to come to paradise. You got to come to paradise.
Hey, there you go. Sounds good right now.
Got to come to paradise. Now, next Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know who I'm having on because I didn't bring my notes because it's been that kind of day, but join us at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. It'll be a surprise for me as well as for you. Of course, I'll be casting the show before then. And real quick, tell the folks about Dreamers.
Tell the folks about Dreamers.
Yeah,
well,
we're all dreamers. All of us are dreamers.
We are all dreamers. Yep. Dream and reach. Reach for that star, your own special star, and be the best that you can be. Make a difference in this world. In the way that you can, and only you can. And the world will appreciate everything that you can give.
And don't let anyone tell you no.
That's
don't
correct.
Let anyone tell you that you cannot do something. Because if people had told the astronauts they couldn't land on the moon,
yep.
We wouldn't have astronauts landing on the moon. If someone had told the people that started the internet, you can't do the internet, it's impossible, we wouldn't be having these conversations.
That's very true. Yep.
And don't wait until you get in your 50s like I did to wake up and go, wait a minute, I can do any damn thing I want to do. Nobody tell me no anymore.
Yep, I wish that somehow I could roll back the clock, you know, and go back to when I was 20, 30. If I had only awakened back then, where would I be today? I don't know.
And therein is the tail end of what I usually say at the show. Don't wait until you're at the end of your life and you're saying shoulda, woulda, coulda, or I wish I had, because it's too late. Even though Ann and I started late, we're having the time of our life, and there's no going back for us.
That's quite true. Yes, yes.
I mean, you think about it.
We go for the gusto in every single breath. Absolutely.
Really? You've got 26 books out. I've got 18 out. I've got a radio show. I have photography that I sell. I have designs that got dropped in my lap. Said, Yvonne, we want you to put your photography on our product. And what am I going to say? No, I don't think so. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's fun. And I have a husband that's disabled. So don't tell me you don't have flipping time. You have as much time as you choose to have. Is that right, Ann?
That is correct. You make your choice and you run with it. Absolutely. Just don't wait. Go for the yes, as William Shatner says.
Absolutely. And when the show goes dark, don't hang up, because I got some things to tell you that'll go into archives. But ladies and gentlemen, be like me and Ann. Whatever comes your way, grab it and run with it like you stole it. And join me on Wednesday night, because we're going to have some more fun, some more laughs, and we're going to bring Ann back. So until Wednesday night, good night.
Thank you.
You, Ann, thank you, honey, so much for being on the show. I had a ball. I was living.
You are welcome. It's been a blast.
It has, and I can't wait for you to come back.
Oh,
now,
thanks.
What's going to happen when we hang up, I'm going to put the show up in archives, and then when it all comes out, I'm going to post it on my page and tag you on it. Take that show and post it everywhere and promote yourself. And then when I upload it into all the podcasts, I'm also going to tag you in the podcast. Take them and run them like you stole them. Yeah, it's my gift to you, because I love you and I want you to succeed even more. And people can't help but love you, honey. You're wonderful.
Well, thank you. So are you.
And we are successful, because we don't take no anymore.
That's right.
No,
yeah, we're like a couple of stones rolling down the hill. Nobody's going to stop us now. Heaven help us.
No. And then when we get to the bottom, we'll just find another divot and just take off and go someplace else. Yeah. No grass going to grow under our feet. Not going to happen. I'm going to get off. I'm going to get off from here, my friend. I'm going to set you back up for maybe August. You think you'll have some more books out? You'll have some more books out by
then?
Excellent.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
You're going to be a regular, so just keep cranking them out, sweetheart.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Yvonne. I really appreciate it.
And make me that CD so I can play it on the show.
I have to make a CD of me? Okay. All right. I'll have to contact my producer.
Okay. And make me a CD and so I can play it on the show. And who knows? You might get that invitation to the Metropolitan Opera after all.
Oh, my Lord. That would be a miracle. It would be amazing.
No. This is my philosophy. The impossible we can do right now. The improbable takes 5 minutes longer.
You're probably right.
So get me that CD. Get me that CD.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, my darling. Talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, bud. You have a great night. A good weekend.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.